Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Zero Lux. Let the intro begin.
We are the main ghost hunters.
How many people are here?
I can be touched sometimes. Are you happy
to
see us?
Who's that?
You open.
Someone here? Hello?
It's a definite feeling being watched.
Are you touching the girl's hand?
Whoa.
How long have you been here?
I don't know. It's really here.
Do you stay here in this house?
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Maine Ghost Hunters Presents Zero Lux Radio. Tonight we're continuing our paranormal fraud series. It is Wednesday, September 5th, and our esteemed guest this evening is John Brightman. John Brightman is from New England Paranormal Research. We interviewed John several months ago. He contacted us regarding some of our advertisements with paranormal fraud that we were posting and making sure our peers were aware of what's going on in our neck of the woods. He contacted us and wanted to share some information with us regarding the topic of our postings. We're going to play that for recording here in just a few minutes. Before we do that, I just also want to announce that we're going to have a very special call-in this evening. We're going to be co-hosting with CJ Machado. So we're going to be talking further about fraud, some of his experiences, and talking about paranormal disunity. So hope you can hear the show very well this evening. We've been having some sound issues. So if you have any problems, speak up in the chat room and we'll let you know what's going on. And until then, stay with us and we will have John Brightman on the air. I guess we'll start by just asking you to talk a little bit about yourself. So if you can just introduce your team, where you're from, and your name, and we'll start with that.
All right. My name's John Brightman. I'm the founder of New England Paranormal Research. We're a group that's out of Massachusetts, South Coast Massachusetts, not too far from Providence, Rhode Island, Newport, Rhode Island. It's right on the border. Eight of us in the group. We've been together for around 4 to 4.5 years now. Love doing the paranormal. It's a great feeling to give back and, you know, be able to help people that have no idea what's going on in their house and not sure what's going on. So it's just a great thing to be able to go there, explain to them what could possibly be going on, how to handle what's going on in their house, what they should do to react or not react to it, things like that. It's an interesting field to be in. Because we're all learning more right now. Nobody really knows exactly what's going on, so it's very interesting. It's fun.
Now, just to clarify, when you say nobody knows, you're not just speaking about your team members. You're talking about the field in general.
I'm talking about the field in general because nobody is, and it's not an exact science. You know, nobody's figured it out. You know, this is why they're here. This is how they're here. Just in general, nobody knows every answer.
And I'd say that I would agree with that. I mean, that's why we're all doing what we're doing. If we had all the answers, there wouldn't be as many teams out there trying to find the true answers to the questions of why are there spirits and where do they come from and why are they lingering around. So,
well, a lot of the reason why there's too many teams out there is because we all know the shows. You know, they show what they do, it's for entertainment purposes, and I totally get that. But the lot of teams that pop up do it for the wrong reasons. They want their 5 minutes of fame, stardom, things like that, and that's what they're doing it for. So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are taking the wrong aspect of this field. And, you know, there are some groups out there that legitimately do get their 5 minutes of fame, do get their, you know, little cameos on shows, but still go out and do the right thing, too.
Exactly.
And I totally respect that in any of them. And just like you guys, you know, you guys are doing a show to on the radio to bring awareness to people to what's out there in the field, what's going on in the field, so people can see the real truth besides just the TV shows. You know what? That's awesome. That's great. And I respect you guys for that, and I know a lot of other people do. But then you get the other people that, are, like I said, doing it just for the fame of it because it's the next big thing and it's popular right now.
You're right, and there are a lot of people who, I mean, we've come across teams who have formed specifically for the purpose of trying to get a TV show. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they got together.
Yep, it's true. I mean, you see, and, you know, no offense to any of the shows out there. I'm friends with quite a few of the people on different shows, but you got the new show, Paranormal Challenge. That's basically focusing on teams and putting them in a position to, you know, show how they use equipment, things like that. And that's what they're doing is getting these people that they, you know, don't have a team or just started a team and like, ooh, we can go be on TV.
Right.
And they think they're going to be the next biggest thing.
Yeah. And did they actually, I haven't really followed that show much. I did watch the first few episodes that they put together on their first season. Have they moved on to a second season or are they?
Yes, they did move on to a second season. It will be airing soon. I actually know somebody, a friend of mine from Indiana, that her team got selected for it. And, you know, her team is an awesome team. I know why they're doing it, because they want more notoriety for their team because they're in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And even if they lose, they don't care about that.
Yeah.
They, you know, I've talked to her about it, and she's like, yeah, it'd be awesome to win and, you know, have the country think that we're that good of a team. That's not what we're out to prove. We're just trying to get more notice in the Indiana area because there's teams out there, she said, that are being contacted to do cases. And they're going in telling these people, oh, my God, you got, you know, the gates of hell underneath your house. You
got
to leave and sell your house. And they're getting the wrong people to go there. You know, she's a very good investigator and her team's very good. And that's the problem is these people are getting the wrong people going to the house because they were on a show or they were want that 5 minutes of fame.
Yeah, and unfortunately that's not just the case in areas where there are smaller populations either or where you're out away from the more mainstream. That's happening all over the place where, like you said, teams are just popping up left and right because of these television shows, these reality paranormal TV shows, which are more for entertainment purposes than anything else, and people just think they're going to, you know, learn how to do it from watching these TV shows, what equipment they should be using, the processes they should be following. And then they're putting together a website, putting some ads in some newspapers or what have you. And there are people out there who are having real problems contacting these teams and relying on their, for lack of a better term, expertise that they're touting and going in and giving them bad information.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, that's why I tell all the private residences or even, you know, private buildings, whether it's commercial or residential, I should say, I tell them when they call us up and they ask us, you know, could you come in and do an investigation? We'd be glad to. Why don't you do, and I ask them, have you called around? You know, have you talked to anybody else? Whether it's over the phone or email, I ask them a few questions first. And a lot of times they're like, nope, you're the first one we found, or you got referred to us. That's great. And I'll tell them straight out, why don't you do some background check on the group? Why don't you do... ask around. We'll be glad to follow you a couple of, you know, references from different people or give you their numbers, and they'll be, you know, glad to answer any questions for you.
Yeah, and I think that's important to, you know, give your potential clients information about who you've worked with in the past and allow them to contact them and see exactly how your team operates from another client's perspective. So they can, you know, answer their own questions and have a better view as to who you are and what you're going to do when you come in and do the investigation.
It's true. I mean, it's your home. You've got to protect it. I mean, if you had, there's a website out there now that you can go to and do, not so much background checks, but it's I just don't want to say the website and promote it, but it's a website that you can go to and, you know, basically if you need a carpenter, if you need... a handyman, anything, you can go there and get referrals from other people that have used these people. Yep. You know, it would almost be a great thing if the paranormal community could do that. And I know a lot of people like to join up on, you know, the TAPS home team or this home team or that home team and be like a subsidy of them. And a lot of times that's a good thing because even though, you know, TAPS has his show or Everyday Paranormal had its show, they try to do the right thing because they don't want just anybody going into homes. So they try to hire the right people to work in that area that they can pass the case down to. And it's, they do background checks and try to be pick reputable teams. Sometimes one or two might fall through the cracks and they do get rid of them, but you need that. You know, you should do a background check. People coming into your house, you need to know who's coming into your house.
Exactly. And that's a good point that you bring up. And that's one of the reasons why we have started this paranormal fraud awareness kind of series on our Blog Talk Radio. And we do a lot of broadcasting on Facebook and Twitter and our website regarding paranormal fraud and being aware and making sure you know who you're working with, not just as a client, but as a potential investigator that's getting into the field or moving from one location to another. And that's kind of how you got in contact with us, right? Let's talk a little bit about that. So how did you come to contact Maine Ghost Hunters with regard to paranormal fraud?
Well, I'd listened to a couple of your shows, and I saw, you know, when you guys were first starting this paranormal fraud. So I was like, you know what, I want to see what's going on, because I like to, you know, especially coming from living in New England here, I like to know about different groups in New England, and I don't get a chance to meet every group that's out here. So I turned into your show, the first couple of episodes that you had about the paranormal fraud, and I heard you talking about a specific group. And next thing I heard from one of my group members that owns the Rose Island Lighthouse, that group happened to be going there. So I happened to call him and let him know, you know, be careful, watch out, I've heard some things. And he says, oh, they already came. And I'm like, I thought they were coming in a couple of weeks. He says, no, they had to change it. They ended up coming 2 weekends ago. And I was like, so how was everything? Well, you know, they left the place a mess. And now this is a bed and breakfast that is usually booked year-round pretty much. People come from, like, Australia. People come from everywhere just to come stay at this lighthouse. And it's not because it's haunted. It's because of the history of it. Just a quick rundown. I mean, you get to have the whole second floor to yourself. It's got 2 bedrooms, full bathroom, living room, kitchen. Downstairs are just private bedrooms with a small bathroom, a separate kitchen area in it. You're on a 10-acre island by yourself. He brings you over on the boat, drops you there. So, I mean, it's really remote, and a lot of people would like to experience that, so they rent it out.
Right.
Part of the deal is you got to take care of it. You know, you got to clean up after yourself. You got to change the sheets yourself. Even though it's a bed and breakfast, you're there for a week sometimes. You got to do all that stuff yourself. These guys rented the lighthouse out for 2 nights. And when they left just food out on tables. They ended up breaking an old antique lamp. He has a lot of antique pieces that were given to him and some that were still there from the time it was an actual lighthouse back in the early 30s, early 20s. And he ended up going there to clean up after them, finding one of the lamps broken and stuffed in a little box in the corner like he wouldn't notice that it was gone. You know, and it's just disrespectful. You know, he opens the place up for people, especially investigators, to go there because it's such a great location with great activity. And, you know, just disrespect it.
Yeah, absolutely. So he rents the lighthouse out and he lets the teams go in there completely unsupervised?
Well, that's changed now. That's changed now after before he was doing it. And, you know, he never had a problem. For the past year, there has never been a problem whatsoever. He would drop people off on the island and, you know, he'd go give them a little quick tour, show them where everything is. Show them how to turn the generator on if they needed extra power, because the island's completely run by windmill power. But if for some reason it's been a couple days out there and no wind for some reason, the power goes down, so you can kick the generator on. So he gives you the whole tour, explains everything, shows you the rooms, the layout of the island. Then it's pretty much, okay, I'll see you in a day or see you in 2 days.
Okay.
Well, he used to do it for all paranormal groups. He doesn't know more. Now he has one of his guys, or sometimes I volunteer for him, to spend the night out there and watch the island, because it's just, it's too much. And before, he wasn't charging a deposit. It was just whatever the cost was. If you stay in two nights, it might be $400. If you stay in one night, it might be $150. Whatever he set the cost up with that group, that's what he did. Well, now he charges a deposit plus the cost because of people going in there and breaking things and leaving in a mess.
Now, this team that he had come into Rose Island Lighthouse that left there with breaking things and leaving a mess behind, had he ever worked with that team before? Was it the first time he had interacted with them?
I believe it was the first time that he's ever interacted on an investigation like that with them on the island. I believe he knows one of the members just because he's something to do with a lighthouse association or a lighthouse organization, and he works up at a, or he has something to do with a lighthouse up in New Hampshire. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that's what he told me from Rose Island. And, you know, it's just, he that was basically the first time that they had been on the island, and he doesn't do background checks on teams. You know, he kind of asked me, you know, as we're partners in this group that we're in, New England Paranormal Research, he kind of asked me and relies on me, hey, have you ever heard of this team? They're renting it out. Have you ever heard of this team? They're coming here. Mm-hmm. And I know quite a few of the teams, so I'll say, yeah, I know them, have heard great things about them, or no, I don't know them, haven't heard anything, you know, and I just kind of give them that kind of heads up. And, you know, I hadn't heard anything at the time from at first. I hadn't heard of anything from them before. So I, from that group. So it was kind of like, yeah, go ahead, I guess. I've never really heard of them or at the time heard anything bad about them. And then when I ever heard your show and what was going on, I contacted him and he was just floored. And then when he ever told me what happened, I felt bad because I wasn't there for him, you know, to like kind of like say, hey, maybe you shouldn't, you know, I've heard bad things.
Right. Okay. Now, but by the time you had contacted him after hearing our radio broadcast, you heard our radio broadcast, you reached out to your friend who owns the Rose Island Lighthouse to give him a little bit of a warning with concern regarding, you know, the team that was going to be going in there. And by then it was a little late because he had already had them in.
Yeah, he had told me the date, and the date was supposed to be actually like 2 weeks after I heard your first show. And so I called him right away, like the next day, and he's like, oh, they ended up having to bump up the date. I guess a couple people were going to have to back out, and they didn't want to lose it. So they called and asked us to come in like a week or two earlier. And I was like, oh. And then that's when he explained to me everything, you know, about the place being a mess, the lamp being broken, and, you know, how upset he was about it. And because he's had some, you know, great groups go over there and, you know, nothing but the utmost respect for the place. They, you know, they take their garbage. Like, you don't even really have to take your garbage off the island. There is big barrels that he has his workers go over and get twice a week. But most of the groups that go over there, they take everything back off with them.
Right.
You know, they just, they respect it a lot. And that's the biggest thing here is, you know, whether it's going to a place like a general public place like that or, you know, going into your own home, you need to watch out for what's going on and who you're bringing in. Mm-hmm. And that's why I thought it was very important when I've heard your show in the past, since we're both talking about the same group, the same person, I thought it was very important to, you know, come on and do the show and, you know, just kind of make the awareness even more of what some of these groups and people are doing out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, like I said, that's what this show is all about, what this series is all about is, you know, we're focused on one team and one individual currently, but there's, you know, it's all about the awareness that needs to be made out to the public and to the paranormal community in general regarding, you know, who is out there that's not not working with the best of intentions. So now let's talk a little bit about this this lamp that was broken. So he let the team in. Went back to the island after they'd left, and now he has to transport them off the island, right?
Yes. He basically has you meet at the dock before you to go over. He shows you where to park, and then you jump on the boat, and it's about a 10, 10-15 minute ride out into the ocean to go over to the island. And then once you get there, he docks the boat on that dock and he gets off, takes you through, does all the walkthrough and everything, shows you where everything is, explains the island. He probably spends about an hour, hour and a half with you when you first get there. You know, points out where all the rooms are, everything. Tells you the history of the island, what other teams have reportedly gotten there, where some of the more hot spots are that, you know, you want to focus on probably. Not saying not to check everything out, but just, you know, this is where everybody seems to get a lot of stuff, or over here or over there. And, you know, goes through everything with you, leaves you his cell phone number in case you need anything throughout the night or two nights if you're there. And then he'll take off. He might come back during the day, the next day, or he might send one of his workers just to check, make sure everything's good. And then, you know, then you stay the second night if you're there two nights, and then he'll come back and get you. And when he comes back and gets you, it's basically most people like us, you know, obviously as being part of the group, you know, we just basically wait at the dock for him because he knows that, you know, obviously we're not going to trash the place or leave it a mess. But, you know, for the most part, they're probably waiting outside the lighthouse just waiting for him. He'll get off the boat, come up, talk to him, get everybody together, and then go on a boat. He doesn't really do a walkthrough. Then he'll take everybody back off the island, go pick up his next group or next people that are renting the island, bring them over, and then that's when he does his walkthrough. And when he did, that's when he found all this stuff. You know, the beds weren't made. There was food left all over the counters. The dishes were still in the sink. And then that's when he was walking through and noticed the lamp was missing. And he's looking around, and he finds a little cardboard box with all the pieces to the lamp stuffed in it in a closet.
Wow. So he went over to the island to pick them up after their investigation, expected that they would have cleaned up after themselves like anybody would expect when you let someone into your location or your establishment and leave them unsupervised, and then brought back another team and had to walk that team through the location with the mess that you're describing.
Actually, it was a little worse than bringing back another team. It was a private family from California that was renting the whole island out. There was 14 family members that were there. So he was kind of expecting, you know, to go back over like he always does, have the beds made, dishes washed, you know, whatever they use picked up. And he walked in and, like, just looked, and he was upset, appalled. I mean, he was apologizing to the family. He ended up giving the family back like a quarter of their stay because he felt so bad that they walked into that. And this is a nonprofit organization that relies on, you know, the renting of these rooms to keep it going. So it's, you know, they have to account for everything. And when something like that happens, you know, that just turns around and makes it tougher on them because they got to rent it out even more or make the money up some other way. And,
right.
So it's, you know, but he had to do it. It was the right thing to do for that family.
Yeah, absolutely. So not only did he have to clean up after them, and not only did he find furnishings that had been broken and dirtied and not clean, but he also lost money because the next renters, he had to clean up afterwards, and to make things good with them, he had to give them back a significant portion of that cost, actually.
Yes. Yep.
Unbelievable. So when he found this, when he found the lamp that had been broken and stuffed in a box and stuffed in a closet, did he contact this team to find out what had happened?
From what he told me, he did contact them, and he just basically said, you know, hey, what happened? You know, you guys were supposed to clean up. I noticed that there's a lamp broken. Of course, they denied the lamp. They said that that must have been like that. Nobody from their group would do something like that or touch it, and you know, so they just left it. He, you know, he's not a type of person to sit there and argue and argue and argue. So after a few minutes, he just let the whole lamp issue go. And, you know, like he said, he'll never have that team out there again because of the way they disrespected it. Because he wasn't going to sit there and argue with them. And, you know, that was going to get nowhere. They were obviously not going to be the better person and say, you know what, maybe one of my guys did. Can I send you some money for that? Or, you know, I understand it's, you know, probably very valuable because it was an antique, but can I do something to make it right? They didn't. they just kept arguing with them, saying that, you know, oh, it couldn't have been us, and, all right, I'm sorry about the dishes, or I'm sorry that we didn't take the garbage, but, you know, right, whatever. And they just argued with him, so he just finally gave up. And that's when he, you know, decided from now on, there's a deposit. And yeah, if you want to leave a mess like that and not clean up or break something, we keep the deposit. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Now, did he address the, you know, the place not being cleaned up and put back into the condition it was when they arrived at all, or?
He did, and he got the runaround about that, too. You know, they apologized about it a couple of times, and, you know, sorry, we were, you know, just in a rush to get packed up because we all woke up late. And, you know, he, like, said to him, you know, there's no excuse for that. You know, that's what you guys were expected to do. Would you go into a family's home or a friend's home, create this mess, and then go, all right, I'm flying back to my house now after a vacation,
right,
and leave it to somebody else? And, you know, there was no real response. There was, you know, a couple of, oh, sorry about that, we'll take care of it the next time. And, like, told him there won't be no next time.
Right.
So.
Wow, I'm just appalled at the behavior of these people. Yeah.
You know, it's a shame because there are people, whether it's a true paranormal occurrence that's going on in their house, or, you know, and you guys have been around long enough to know, not every single person that calls you is having a paranormal activity in their house. I hate saying it that way because it's so modernized and made into, you know, the movies saying paranormal activity. But, you know, having some kind of activity in their house, they it's not always that. It's, you know, they could have a mental issue, they could have health issues, and or it could be just down to the standard electrical wiring in your house, and you guys know that as well as I do. So when they call, you know, we want to do the best thing for them and help them the best way, and there's just groups out there that are doing it totally wrong and sometimes hurting the homeowners even more.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. You know, we've gone into locations and conducted investigations, and it's not that these people are making things up to get you to go in there. It's just that they don't know what's going on. So they may be experiencing things. They may be having feelings or sensations of being watched. You know, the hair coming up on the back of their heads in certain areas of their home, and they just don't know why. They don't want to know what's going on. So that's why they call us. We go in there. We do our investigation. We review our evidence as best we can, and within, you know, the knowledge that people have within the paranormal community, and report back what we found. And sometimes you're absolutely right. It's a leaky wire in a wall, or it's a high EMF coming off of a refrigerator, or what have you, and it's not paranormal. And they may be a little disappointed, but they're happy to know that there's something. You know, they're happy to get an answer to what their question is.
Well, we dealt with a case. It was right before Christmas. It was up in not too far from UMass Amherst in Massachusetts. And we drove up there, and we had gone through probably 3 or 4 phone sessions with them. Numerous people from my team had talked to the 2 homeowners on the phone. And we actually went up and drove up and did a face-to-face interview for about 2.5-3 hours one day before we actually set a point to go in. It ended up working, unfortunately, to our advantage, and I hate saying this, but with the disaster that had happened last December with the big ice storm and everything that came through right after, actually it was in November, but the big ice storm that came through Massachusetts and northern New England and pretty much took down trees and wiped out people and power out in Western Mass for almost 2 or 3 weeks.
Yep.
We got to actually do the investigation that week that house had absolutely 100% no power.
Oh, wow.
So it actually worked to our advantage, as much as I feel bad saying that, because the homeowner was without electric and everything
right,
like that. So we go in there, and we, during the initial interviews, we did a few little sweeps of the house with different meters, tri-field, K2, mel meters, things like that. And we found huge, huge surges of power coming through walls. So when we actually got to do the investigation, we were picking nothing up, absolutely nothing. None of those surges were still there. So that right there set a red light off for us, because we were getting those huge surges before, not getting them now. We ended up going back when they got power just to see, if there was any more surges. And sure enough, they were back. They were strongest in the living room where they were telling us that they were seeing things, seeing shadows, seeing lights out of the corner of their eyes. Their baby, who's at the time was probably about 2 or 3 at the most, was not, you know, couldn't get comfortable in its playpen in the living room. It was crying all the time, moving all the time. It just wouldn't relax. But yet you bring him in another room, and he would relax calmly. So when we did the sweep of that room, right in the chair beside the playpen was the back outside wall of the house. You would actually, the no meter was spiking at over 100.
Wow.
It was just a huge, huge reading. And we sat there for about 10 minutes, and I got in the worst headache that you could believe just from sitting there in like a 10-minute session. So we ended up going outside, and what we found out, we have an electrician that's on our group, licensed electrician for over 30 years, and he noticed that the box for the side of the house where the electric comes into, the meter, it was not grounded down to the ground. So the whole house was not grounded.
Hmm.
Where usually they have, you know, the wire that goes right down to the stake
right.
in the ground.
Yep.
There was no wire attached to the stake.
Wow.
So the whole house was ungrounded. That's where this was coming from. So we ended up, after going through that house 3 times now with an investigation, explained to them what was going on. They were, you know, happy to hear that it wasn't paranormal, that we believed that it wasn't. And we ended up getting our electrician and a friend of his to go up, meet NSTAR up there, and they grounded the house down for them. We've gone back once since then just to do a checkup with them, and nothing, they've had no more problems since then.
Wow.
And that's just a perfect example. But what I'm getting at is they had a team prior to us going there that told them that the house was completely haunted. There was family members in the house haunting them. They didn't want them living there. And what ended up happening was they just dropped the ball. They were like, there's nothing else we can do. Your house is haunted. You need to move.
Hmm.
And left these people hanging there, not
yeah.
knowing what's going on. And that's happening so much in this field. And you know, it just comes back to the paranormal awareness that these people need to do research and check on the groups that they're having coming to their house.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like you said, another team had been there previously and given them bad information because they did not know how to look, or they didn't care to look for reasons for the experiences that the residents were having beyond something paranormal.
They gave them a DVD when it was all done, and the DVD, they showed me, the homeowner showed me the DVD, and they had a K2 session sitting in the kitchen and in the living room, which is right on this back wall where the box is for the main power to come into your house, in the meter, where it's not grounded. Sat in both the rooms for 25 minutes where the K2 is spiked, not even dropping, and it's on video, not even dropping back down to the normal zero or orange color, and green color, I'm sorry. And they're telling them that, see, the spirit's so mad, it doesn't want to talk, it's so mad, it's keeping it at solid red. This group was so happy that they got this. They were like, in the video, you would think it was a 2-year-old kid or a 3-year-old kid in a candy store, because
wow.
the K2 going up to solid red.
Unbelievable. Yeah, so like I said, it speaks to the lack of education of the team members, or these people who are creating these teams and advertising themselves as paranormal investigators. And sadly, an awful lot of these people, because they know that if they don't, if you were a carpenter and you were to put together an advertisement to say, hey, hire me to build you a porch, I just started doing this last week, probably not many people are going to call you.
No.
So a lot of these people that are just starting their teams, they outright lie about their levels of experience. And they'll
yep.
tell people they've been doing it for years. And if they've been doing it for, you know, a month, they'll say they've been doing it for a year. Or if they've been doing it for a year, they might say they've been doing it for 10 years. Or it's amazing because, you know, I see people doing that. And this team that we're talking about claims to have, you know, over a decade of experience. And we know for a fact she hasn't, because she had never done anything like this until we actually met her just a few years ago.
And so it's funny because there's groups out there that I've heard, just like what you said, they get around it to say they're not lying, because they'll get 16, 20 people in their group, and they'll go,
right.
Oh, we have over 50 years of experience. Well, yeah, when two of you have been doing it 3 or 4 years, one of you has been doing it one, this one's been doing it
yeah.
two. Yeah, you add up the 20 people together. Yeah, you got over 50
yeah.
years, but that don't mean nothing.
Exactly.
I no way whatsoever. I've only been doing this four and a half years as a group. You know, I've investigated a little bit previous to that, and I'll be the first to admit, I played around with it a little bit, you know, prior to that. But no way as an official investigating, and, you know, I'd go out to the Freetown State Forest, or I'd play around my house because of what's going on and check things out. But, you know, no way was I investigating. I don't run around and say, oh, I've been doing this a decade just because I played around with it before, you
right.
know, or bought myself a K2 10 years ago and would walk around my house once in a while and just see if I get something to answer me or work with it. I don't run around saying I've been doing this over a decade.
Exactly.
I'm straight honest with the people. You know, I've been doing it four and a half years.
Yeah. Yeah, and like it is amazing what people use as their measure for when they consider themselves to have started investigating the paranormal. So, you know, if they were 16 years old in high school and they, you know, tried to record EVPs in their basement or their attic, well, that's when they started.
Yep.
It doesn't
yep.
matter if they're 40 years old and they're just now starting a team.
Yep.
So, it's, yeah. Now, I want to speak a little bit about, you know, the changes in behavior based on the experience with this team. So the owner of the Rose Island Lighthouse has actually completely revamped the way he does his investigations, or the way he rents his location to teams. So let's speak about that a little bit. So he has had such a negative experience allowing this team to come into his location that he no longer allows teams to have access to his location without somebody that he is very familiar with kind of supervising the entire event.
Correct. You know, he doesn't allow any teams to go in there now without leaving a deposit because of it now, where before, you know, they were able to just, you know, if you called up and said, you know, I'd like to get it from 8 at night till 4 in the morning, you know, he would be like, all right, it's this much, or, you know, and that's it, and you wouldn't have to pay a deposit. Now he's requiring a $500 deposit that's refundable as soon as he picks you up off the island and he does a walkthrough of the lighthouse and the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But he had to do that because of valuables and because of, you know, not taking care of it.
Right.
He also now, like you said, he asked that either one of his staff members from the organization, or, as I said, sometimes he'll ask me or one of my group members to stay the island, stay on the island with the night with them. And we're glad to do that because we love it. It's like a second home to us. So we want to look out to it just as much as he does.
Right.
So we do that. And unfortunately, you know, that's kind of ruined it for other people, because not that we're there and we're causing problems while we're there with the island. But, you know, I mean, it's still the fact that you could have had the whole island yourself, no deposit, you know, it was probably one of the better places in that you could go, and no offense to any of the other locations that, you know, you can go to, such as Waverly Hills or St. Augustine Lighthouse, no disrespect to them. It's just, you know, they require a deposit. It's a very expensive place to go to. You pay a lot of money to go to these places, and you have a place right here in New England that was hand over fist probably just as equal to one of those places with the activity, and you could go investigate it for probably less than $300 for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And you could bring as many people as you want. He never limited it, saying that you couldn't bring 20 or you have to have a minimum of 5. He never did that.
Right.
He just set a price. That's what the price was. You guys go have the island. And now, unfortunately, this group's ruined it, that, you know, he has to put all these special guidelines to it of a deposit and somebody watching you and babysitting you because he doesn't trust anyone.
Right. And rightfully so, that he charges that deposit. And I don't want this to be seen as a negative because he charges a deposit, but unfortunately that does now preclude some teams from being able to go in there, because, you know, paranormal investigations and people don't charge for that. You know, if you're a reputable team and you're doing this for the love of the field and to further your education, you're trying to help people. You're not charging people to do that. So people aren't making a lot of money. You know,
exactly. I mean, you know, the groups that are the reputable groups aren't charging anything. I know some reputable groups that do travel quite far. There's one out of Connecticut that I know that they will go help cases down in Georgia and in Florida. They only ask if they would pay for their gas to get there because they will drive. That's
right.
The only thing they ask.
Yep.
And know what? I can respect that. If you
Absolutely.
Are going to travel that far, you might need to get re-compensated for the gas. They don't ask for the hotels to be paid for. They don't ask for a fee. Just can you cover our gas to get there? We would be glad to help you.
Exactly.
And that's respectable. That's totally understandable.
Yep.
But there are teams out there, though, and I was just going to mention this to you. There are teams out there that are charging for this.
Yep.
And I think that's totally disrespectful, and that's them just preying on somebody that needs help.
Exactly.
Because and I'm sure you're a man that goes on Facebook, I know, and do, you know, I'm sure you've seen the post already, but it's been going around for a couple of days now. There's a group of girls out of, I believe it's Las Vegas. I could be wrong on the location, but I believe it's somewhere out southwest. The oldest girl is 21. The two other girls are 18 and 20, I believe. They are renowned demonologists. They actually go around, and I read the report, and if I can find it, I'm going to forward it to you again. I'll forward it to you so you can read it if I can find it again. They are actually charging people. The oldest one's father is a priest that has been in possession removal for basically an exorcism for over 30 years, he says. He's done over 10,000 exorcisms in the country alone. Now he's teaching his daughter and her two friends how to do this. They've been doing this, the oldest one's been doing this for 14 years. So my question is, the girl's 21, you take 14 out of 21, that leaves 7. So you mean to tell me this girl's been doing exorcisms since 7 years old?
Yeah.
I just don't buy it. Well, now they just got picked up by a paranormal TV show. And they're going to do exorcisms on TV.
Okay.
So that's the first problem, that you're going to have all these kids out there watching this show thinking that they're demonologists now and they can do exorcisms.
Right.
And somebody's going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst part of all is they actually put this in their post on Facebook saying how we're there for the client. Yes, we charge. Yes, it's expensive. And it takes multiple sessions. But we do rid you of the demons and the beings that are in your body that do not belong there.
Wow.
And they posted this for people to read. I cannot believe that these girls would be charging this and that their father, who is supposedly a priest, would allow them to do this and actually teach them to do this and charge these people who he's supposedly supposed to be helping.
Right. That's amazing. Yeah, unbelievable.
It's just that it's gone so, the paranormal field has gone so commercial. Now, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite. I'm sure, you know, you've seen my post on Facebook. I do. I travel to a lot of conventions. I do lectures. And I do sell paranormal equipment. But that is not why I got into this, to strictly go out and try and make myself famous or try to go to these conventions and sell equipment. If you look at my website, and I know this is going to sound like a shameless plug, and it's not meant to be. It totally isn't. I do sell the equipment lower than most anybody else out there on the field, because my biggest thing, and anybody, even some of the big names on TV will tell you, they've known this about me since they've met me, that the equipment prices have gone through the roof and skyrocketed because everybody thinks they can make a buck on selling equipment.
Right.
So I as a person trying to form a group, the equipment was expensive to be able to get a DVR system, to be able to get night vision cameras, to be able to get full spectrum cameras. That stuff is expensive, and a lot of people cannot afford it. So I wanted to turn around and be able to get this equipment, good quality, name brand stuff, and be able to sell this same equipment to investigators that are just starting out and let them be able to afford it. and not have a $250 or $300 price just for a digital recorder or a $300 camera just because it's full spectrum versus your regular eyesight. Because it took somebody 10 minutes to pull a couple of lenses out and then put it back together.
Right.
So that's why I started selling the equipment and keeping it at such a low price, is to be able to try and help out the community to get this equipment. And, you know, it's just with this commercialization of the paranormal field, it's kind of ruining it for everybody and turning it into something that it shouldn't be, but it is, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that just to speak to that a little bit with regard to traveling and speaking at events and things like that, whether you get paid or not, if you do get a little bit of a reimbursement for your travel, or you get some sort of per diem or something like that, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because it's not like you're out there taking advantage and charging the people who are looking for your help. You are sharing your experience and knowledge with people and helping them further themselves in the field. And I think that, you know, all the time and investments you put into it personally to get yourself to the point where you can do that, well, if you can get a little bit of that back from the rest of the community, great.
Exactly. I mean, when I do my lectures, I talk about the Bridgewater Triangle here in Massachusetts. My family owns 50 acres of land out in the center of the Freetown Forest where some cult murders have gone on. Some other people have disappeared and their bodies were found there. 3,000 Indians have died in the area. So I go out and lecture about that and bring people more awareness of the whole Bridgewater Triangle area and just kind of fill them in on it. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people haven't heard of this area, and it intrigues them when they hear a story of, and I actually have a lot of police document, whether it's video footage or actual paper document of cases of the Carl Drew murders, the pimp that was in the city of Fall River that killed three prostitutes he ran a cult group, and he actually took their heads off and used their heads as part of the sacrifice. And, you know, he's now in jail, and this is what I lecture about, and people seem to like it. And it's just like you said, you know, I'm not going to a house and charging people to investigate. I'm going to a conference and giving a lecture, and that's what people are paying to be. They're going to the conference expecting to hear a lecture. So they're paying for that anyways.
Exactly. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, and like I said, the team that travels to Florida, you know, they travel a long distance, and they just ask that, you know, someone help out with their travel. Obviously, somebody wants them to come down there because of their experience with certain events or certain activity, and they feel that they can add some value to the investigation for the client. And I don't think it's unreasonable to travel that far and be able to ask someone to contribute a little bit for your travel expense. And the same thing, I know that there was a thread recently on Facebook regarding, you know, if you should accept donations or not. And I think that there's a clear line. You shouldn't be telling people, you know, we're not going to charge you, but we're going to ask you for a donation. You have to give us a donation. What's the difference between that and charging you, you know?
It's the word donation.
Exactly.
And whether you ask for or you're charging them, it's the same thing. If you put you're a nonprofit on your website and somebody wants to give you $50 to say thank you, this is, you know, go buy your guys coffee for coming up here and spending 10 hours tonight at my house, that's different.
Right.
You know, but if you go in there and say, we're a nonprofit, so we accept donations to be here, you know, and you blatantly tell them, you might as well just be saying, hey, we charge you $200 to come here.
Exactly. So, you know, like you said, if a client offers you and says, here, let me help you out with your gas money, or let me help, you know, buy you guys dinner or whatever, here's $50 or $25 or whatever it is, you know, that's great that they want, that they valued you enough to be able to give you that and help you out with your expenses. But to walk in and say, you know, hey, we, like you said, we're a nonprofit and we require a donation of this much. Well, you're not requiring a donation. You're saying we're going to charge you. That's what you're doing.
Yep. And there's groups out there that are doing that. They're trying to play the whole nonprofit organization, you know, and then go around and then charge you. And, you know, it's like, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. And it disgusts me because there's so many new groups. Rhode Island, and you know, you're from New England. Rhode Island's one of the, I believe it's the smallest state in the country. there are probably, I forgot what, my friend Ken from Rise Up Paranormal, he's from Rhode Island, and they're a great group of people, and we were talking one day about this, how many groups have popped up over the past year or two, and just in our area. And just in Rhode Island alone, at one point there was only, I think, nine groups. I believe he said there's over 27 groups now in the smallest state in the country.
Wow.
So that's showing you right there that it's just because of the whole paranormal TV thing, the shows and everything, and how popular it is that everybody wants to become a star.
Yeah. It's amazing. Now, do you work closely with other teams in your area? Do you try and collaborate with them or network at all? Or? Okay.
Yes, very, very, very much so. Because, you know, again, you know as well as I do, besides the paranormal awareness, there's, you know, and trying to protect other groups, locations, things like that, and or protect the homeowners. There's also all that paranormal drama that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with this group doesn't get along with that one, with this person doesn't get along with that person. Trust me, I was and I don't mean this as the way I'm going to say it, but I was a big part of it as being one that was pointed out as somebody that you couldn't trust at first. Somebody had something against me just because, you know, it's just the way this field is. If you get to a step ahead of somebody else, oh, you must be cheating, or you must be doing it wrong, or you're doing it for the wrong reasons. So they stop bad-mouthing you, talking bad, and, you know, slandering your name around. And unfortunately, I went through that for a little while where people were accusing me of faking things and to try and get ahead and things like that. Well, you know what? I can't stand the drama because people were on shows, people weren't on shows. That isn't how you're supposed to represent. We're all in this together for one thing, and that's to try and get more knowledge of the field and help people with that knowledge.
Exactly.
And we're supposed to work together. So we work, we have a few groups. There's two groups out of Connecticut. There's three different groups out of Rhode Island we work very close with. And there's, my group is formed out of three different groups. There was three groups in my area of Massachusetts and southeastern Mass that I've known. One of them was a police officer, actually in Freetown, Mass, and he had formed his group. He lived in Dartmouth, and they were called Old Dartmouth Paranormal. You know, we were always collaborating and doing investigations together. So we were like, you know what, it'd probably be best if, you know, we just work together all the time now. And I was always bringing him on cases. He did a lot more historical stuff, which is fine. That's totally great and everything. We got very busy with home cases, and I always needed him and his investigator to come out and help us. So finally he just said, you know what, I'm going to close Old Dartmouth down. Old Dartmouth's now going to merge with you guys if that's all right with you. Absolutely fine. And then we had another group right here out of Middleborough, Mass. They'd been around for about 2 years. Two older ladies, great people. They ended up, coming to a lot of investigations with us. We met them through mutual friends. So when we did big locations like the Victorian Mansion in Gardner, Mass, or somewhere that we could bring them because we didn't mind having any extra help and we were there as guests of the place, we'd be like, no, you want to come? And great investigators, very smart, very knowledgeable with equipment. So we ended up finally saying, you know, it's only the two of you guys. Why don't you just, you know, close your group down and come join us? And we can just make a really good group with everybody. And they did. And, you know, the working close with other groups is the thing you need to do. You don't want to single yourself out and be that one lone wolf group that thinks they know everything. They're the best at it, and we're better than anybody, so we don't need to talk to anybody or share evidence or explain anything to anybody.
Right. And I think that's a good point. And just to add to that is to be very careful about who you do get involved with, because you don't want to, you know, new groups forming, or, you know, it's not that creating a new group is not a bad thing. It's that doing it in the right way, or in a way that, you know, that's a reputable. You don't want to just be watching Ghost Hunters or watching Ghost Adventures and say, hey, I want to be a ghost hunter now, so I'm going to put together a website. It's finding out how to actually conduct the investigations, working with other teams, getting some experience, and making sure that you're working with the right other teams that have a good reputation.
Exactly. And we've gotten some calls from newer teams. Actually, I think it was about a month ago, we got a call from a gentleman that lived in California. He was moving out here to Dighton, Mass. He used to be a part of a team out there. He was new in it, and he told us right in the email and in the phone call that I talked to him, he'd only been investigating about 6-7 months. He was wondering if we were looking to hire anybody onto the group, bring them on, and train them more. And I said, unfortunately, we're not. We have too many people. And he says, well, how would I go about starting up a team out there? And I told him straight out, you need to get with a team first out here, work with them before you go start a team. I said, because, and I was honest, you know, I said, you only have 6 months experience working with this other group. How much do you really know?
Right.
I said, do you know how each piece of equipment works in certain circumstances? He's like, my group didn't even let me hold any of the equipment yet because I was so new. And I said, so you just answered your question. You shouldn't start your own group. If you don't know how to use the equipment, you shouldn't start your own group. And he kind of got a little mad at me for saying that. And I ended up explaining to him, you know, you need to learn how to do this before you or attempt to do it and build a reputation of somebody that's responsible and knows how to use the equipment and knows what the readings are going to be and why the readings are doing this. And understand that you could be standing next to a microwave and be or a refrigerator and be picking up the reading off of those the refrigerator or the microwave or an alarm clock is giving off that frequency to that piece of equipment.
Yeah.
He didn't even really realize that. So he ended up thinking about it, and, you know, I don't know if he started a group. He's never contacted me again, but I hope that little bit of advice that I could give him made him think twice about it.
Yeah. Hopefully, like I said, there's a lot of people that don't. They just want to get into it. They think it's going to be exciting. They think it's going to be fun. They put together their teams, and then it doesn't take them long, and they usually realize that it's not quite what they thought it was going to be, and then they disappear, and unfortunately they leave people still needing help and not knowing where to turn once they've gone.
I had a woman in my group that's no longer with us. She would literally go to house investigations expecting that, you know, the client says this, the client says that. And she walks in there in the first hour, doesn't get anything on any of the equipment, any of the recorders, because we use a lot of real-time recorders now. She would go in there, sit there for the hour, do an EVP session, not get anything, and, well, this place isn't haunted. I want to go home. And she'd get in her car and leave. And I'm like, you know what? I can't have you in the group because that's not what we're about. We're here to help. We're here for the long haul for the night. Just because you feel there's nothing going on, the place ain't haunted and you're going home.
Right.
That's not the case at all. We don't do that. And, you know, unfortunately, she's not with us no more for that reason. And that's the aspect that people are getting, and the view that people are getting is they don't realize that these shows, even though they're shown, you know, for an hour, there's two episodes on a lot of these shows. They've been brought down to 22 minutes because you can only show 44 minutes of the show. If you were to sit down and time it and cut all the commercials out, it's actually only 44 minutes all these shows are on.
Yeah.
The rest is commercials. Now, to get that 44 minutes, some of these people are at location 3-4 days for 12 hours a day to get that actual 22 minutes for the one half of the episode. And a lot of them don't see that because they don't see the clothes changing color, things like that, because it doesn't get picked up in the night vision cameras.
Right.
It all shows the same thing. So they don't see that. They don't see that there's a little bit of scruff on the side of the face because it doesn't get picked up, that they haven't shaved in 2 days. You know, and that's they don't understand that. They think, oh, wow, in a one-hour show, look at all the stuff they just got. I can't wait to investigate. And they go to a house and get nothing, and they're like, oh, this sucks, and then they go home.
Yeah. I mean, they take, like you said, they take 44 minutes of all the excitement, or what they deem to be excitement, over 3 or 4 days, 2 or 3 days, and they scrunch it all down into that little bit of time.
Yep.
So they don't see the you know unloading the truck and bringing the gear inside and setting it all up that takes hours on end, breaking it down at the end of the investigation, the sitting there for 2 hours in a room asking questions and getting absolutely no response.
I was good friends with Barry and Brad from Everyday Paranormal, and I watched them do the Lizzie Borden house when they did the episode here at Lizzie Borden. They had me come up and hang out with them, and I sat there all three nights, and if any of you guys have seen the show, that episode, you know they really didn't get much. They got like maybe two EVPs, and one of them thinks they got touched.
Mm-hmm.
So out of 3 days of shooting, out of 36 hours of you know, investigating, they got that, but it was shown in 22 minutes. You know how boring that was, those three days?
Yep.
and that's the thing. People don't realize that. They see that, like you said, that one episode, and they're like, I got to go do this. That's going to be amazing, me sitting in a housing and getting that EVP, getting touched. And that's the first thing they think about, and they're right there to try it.
Yep, that's what it's all about, unfortunately, for the majority of the teams that are sprouting up here and there and everywhere. All right. Well, we're pretty close to out of time, so what I want to do is give you an opportunity, if you'd like, to plug your website and plug your team and let people know how they can get in touch with you if they need any assistance in your area. And
definitely. The website is neparanormalresearch.com. We also, we have 8 good group members. You can contact us through the website. Craig, our historian and researcher, he'll be glad to answer any emails or pass them along to any of the other group members. We also have our paranormal equipment site, which is called www.paraequipment.com. If you guys need anything, you know, go take a look there. You can find us on Facebook under New England Paranormal Research or just under my name, John Brightman. And you can find other group members that we have on those websites and look them up on Facebook also. You know, have any questions, feel free to give us a call. Our number's on the website, or leave us a message.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks again, John, for taking the time to get on the air with us and speak about this very important topic. We know that it's not easy to speak out against people sometimes because there's always that concern for backlash or not wanting to be have the finger pointed at you for just being a troublemaker, but we feel that this is a very important topic, and as you do, obviously you wouldn't be on the air with us talking about making sure that we're protecting our members, protecting our communities, and protecting those people who are out there looking for help, who are seeking us out and seeking experience and knowledge rather than hype.
No, absolutely, it's true, and that's why I did this, and I think more people, if they hear the show, should definitely contact you and, you know, let us know about that specific team that we're talking about tonight, if they had a run-in, or even other teams, because until they do, it's not going to stop this. You know, I almost wish, and I know we're almost out of time, but I almost wish that the TV shows would end.
Yeah.
Because I could almost promise you, if the TV shows end, you give it 2 years after the TV shows, you'd see the paranormal community go from the astronomical number that it is now down to about half of it.
Yeah. Or even if they would get back to a focus of what a real paranormal investigation is, unfortunately, a lot of the, you know, well, all the TV shows that are on right now, they require advertising to be supported and be able to continue to be aired. So if they couldn't get people interested in watching that 44 minutes so the advertisers could sneak in their 16 minutes of advertising and get people to buy stuff from them, they wouldn't be on the air.
Exactly.
And how many people watch MPBN? That's what's in Maine anyways, the public broadcasting network that has all the very informational TV shows about history and things like that are, let's face it, kind of dry, and most people don't want to watch it because they're not interested in that. They weren't interested in being entertained.
Exactly. You know, and that brings up a good point, because there's a group that we're going to be working with. There was a TV show that came out on public broadcast down in Rhode Island called R.I. Haunted. Haunted R.I., I'm sorry, Haunted R.I. Jason Mayo and his partner, great guys. They actually worked with Brian Hanois for a little bit doing a few of the episodes. And that's perfectly what it is what you just said. It's public broadcast TV. There was no commercials during the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an hour-long episode that they showed the history of the place for 35 minutes of the location that they were going to. Interviewed tons of people about the history. And then showed like a 25-minute clip of them investigating it. Or I should say probably about a 20-minute clip of them investigating.
Mm-hmm.
And either they got something or they didn't. You know, and that was the thing. I mean, it was back to what an investigation should be, showing the history work behind it, the history of the location.
Right.
You know, not just showing up, talking to a client briefly for about 5 seconds, 10 seconds, then showing them investigating, and then it's commercial, then it's commercial, then it's commercial. So.
Yep. All right. Well, very good. Now, you also have, I don't know if you want to advertise it, there's an event coming up soon at the Rose Island Lighthouse.
Yes, we have an event, Rose Island Lighthouse. It's sold out, but you can check our website or the manager's website that I work for, Ideal Event Management. We have a ton of events coming up, but the new one that's coming up is Rose Island Lighthouse on May 4th with Jay, Britt, and Amy from Ghost Hunters. We'll be out there all night from lectures from 6 until 8, and then investigating from 8:30 once we take the boat over until 2 in the morning. We got a few other events that are coming up down at Fort Mifflin. I believe another one at Hillview Manor, which is a great, great location out in Pennsylvania. So just, you know, keep an eye on the website. ScareFest coming up. We got a bunch of events that we're going to be at, doing the lecture and great events. You guys will have a blast coming out to them.
All right, great. All right, well, thanks again, John. It's been great speaking with you, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Well, thank you very much. Have
all
a
right.
great day.
Thanks, you too.
All right. Well, that was our wonderful guest, John Brightman. I had a lot to share with some experiences down in Rhode Island and some unfortunate incidents that took place at a location down there that is no longer quite so open to the public. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come back, and we'll have we have Erica on the line so far. We have MJ's Erica, that is, MJ's Cat. And we also have our esteemed guest and co-host. We have CJ Machado. So we're going to play a couple commercials and we'll be right back.
Zero Lux Radio is brought to you by the Maine Ghost Hunters Media Team. Learn more about the team, this show, and how you can become a guest at www.maineghosthunters.org/media. Would you like to know what it's like to be a Maine Ghost Hunter? See us live and in action on our YouTube video channel located at www.youtube.com/maineghosthunters. Do you know of a haunted location Maine Ghost Hunters should visit, or someone who needs our help? Call the MGH Ghost Phone at 207-504-6224 or send an email to maineghosthunters@maineghosthunters.org. Zero Lux Radio is always looking for new and interesting guests. If you'd like to suggest a guest or would like to be a guest yourself, contact Maine Ghost Hunters by phone at 207-504-6224 or send email to maineghosthunters@maineghosthunters.org.
All right, welcome back again to Maine Ghost Hunters Presents Zero Lux Radio. We're continuing on with our paranormal fraud series this evening, just bringing awareness to our peers and clients and anybody who cares about the fraud that happens in paranormal and those who perpetuate it and those who commit it. So we're going to bring on some more of our Maine Ghost Hunters members. We're going to start with Teresa. Teresa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Weather's doing pretty good. It started raining a little bit earlier. It's still a little overcast, but all in all, pretty good today.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Good. I'm going to bring on Kat next, I think. Hey, Kat, how you doing, mate?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You're a little scratchy.
Okay, you sound awful to me.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
You do. You sound awful. So I don't know if you sound awful to everybody else, but you sound awful to me. I can hardly understand what you're saying sometimes.
Is the sound breaking up? Or?
It's muffled and staticky a little bit sometimes. I mean, you sound like you're talking through a pillow, kind of, almost, but not as bad as we've heard it before, but you get to points where you're saying stuff, and I can't tell the difference between the syllables that you're saying, so you might want to fix that.
Okay, well, I'll take a look at that in just a minute, make sure I'm going up to the right microphone. All right, we're going to bring Erica next. Erica, are you here with us this evening?
I'm here.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. How are you doing this evening?
Hello?
Okay. I'm going to mute her microphone until we can get her audio fixed. All right. So next, we're going to bring on CJ Machado. CJ, are you with us?
Oh, yeah. I'm right here, man.
How's it going?
It's going all right, you know. Oh. Just another beautiful night in the neighborhood, you know.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Wasn't that a Mr. Rogers line?
Yeah, you know.
So what have you been up to, CJ?
You know, just trying to take it easy, really.
Yeah.
You know, as far as, you know, everything goes, obviously I'm coming off of a, you know, I had my 3 years clean and then I relapsed and then, you know, I'm trying to get my life back in order or whatnot. So, you know, just kind of trying to do that thing and, you know, doing the family thing and that's what's up, you know?
All right. So we're gonna get into a team discussion here and talk about our show we just had and talk about John Brightman and the experiences he had to share with us and go from there. So, Erica, let's see if Erica sounds any better. CJ was a little broken up there, so we're going to mute his microphone for a few minutes, too. And then... Erica, let's test your microphone, see if you're any better now. Hey, Erica, you there?
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you're still breaking up just a little bit.
Is that better? Maybe if I speak louder.
It's a little better. I think we're having some issues with Blog Talk Radio tonight.
Huh, okay.
You sound a little bit better now. I had a hard time getting CJ on the line, and now his microphone is almost cut out, and I hear you. Kat, are you there still?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. A little bit of echo.
All right.
Teresa, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I can hear everybody loud and clear.
Okay.
All right. Well, let me fill in until if CJ's mic can get fixed, but otherwise we have to get the show on the road because we're running out of time.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and take it, and I'll see if I can work with it.
All right. So, Teresa, were you listening?
Yes, ma'am.
You're coming in the clearest for me. So, Erica's like kind of lagged and off, and her responses are a little bit later. So, I'm gonna hone in on you right now. So, what did you think? Yeah. What did you think? What stuck out? What stuck out the most?
Just the lack of, just, you know, when he was talking about this person, this gentleman with the lighthouse and, you know, how he has opened it up to people and has been really open to that. And then for someone to go in and just kind of trash all over it, you know, that's not okay. That's just basic respect.
Yeah.
You know, that's just basic human respect.
Yeah. Yeah,
you
know,
don't do that.
The thing that struck me was the response that that I heard during the interview was that their response was, you know, we were in a hurry to get out of here on time, you know what I mean? So we had things to do. And cleaning up after ourselves was not one of those things to do. You clean up after us.
No, and that's not okay. I mean, you don't go to someone's home. You know, basically, I know the person doesn't live there, but, you know, that's like going to someone's home. You know, you clean up after yourself. You take out your trash. You do all those things. And I don't blame him a bit for being upset. And I think doing a deposit, you know, for the place, that's a great idea. I mean, that is totally within limit. I couldn't believe he wasn't doing it before.
Right, but wait, he wasn't doing it before. He was taking
people on their... Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, well, but the point is that the entire system changed, and now it is essentially unaffordable for teens to go out there. It wasn't before, it is now. Do you know what I mean? Like if you can get a whole bunch of people and pool in, then you might be able to do it. But before, it was like, what did he say? John said it was like something like $300 for a Friday and a Saturday night. I mean, that's totally affordable. We could definitely do that. But you got like
unlimited.
A deposit. Yeah. Go on.
No, it was, and he said it was unlimited. Like you could bring, he didn't mind, you could bring as many people as you wanted to.
Exactly.
You know, for that cost. So.
Right. So thank you to this team for ruining it for everybody.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's essentially what it comes down to.
That's happened with a couple locations recently.
Yeah, it has. Hasn't it? It's kind of a trend.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, when you let people in, that's kind of the risk that you run, and that's why we end up losing places, because people don't respect, respect that as an honor.
Yep.
You know, it's an honor to be able to be in these people's homes or these people's sites that they own. I mean, it's an honor. Even if we're paying, it's still an honor to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it has to be treated respectfully.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think the chances are that Tony or I, more specifically me, would allow any of us to walk a foot out of that building with it not being clean?
Oh, no. That would never happen.
Would it ever cross your mind to step out of that building with it not being clean?
No, because my mother raised me to take care of the things that I use, you know?
Okay.
Nope.
So essentially what we have here is a disrespect level that starts at the top with team leadership and goes right down to the bottom because they know team leadership doesn't care and they sure as heck don't give a crap about it. And whatever comes of it, whatever, it's not their problem. That's the type of team they are. Those are exactly the type of people I want my grandmother's house investigating. What about you?
No. No, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Yep.
You know, I feel bad, especially the issue with the lamp and the, you know, I mean, if something accidentally gets broken and things do happen, then be honest about it and say, this is what happened, you know, we'll take care of it and go from there, you know, I mean, because things do happen. You know me, I'm the super klutz. You know?
That's true.
Knock on wood, I'm surprised I ain't broke something yet. Because I'm always falling down or doing something.
Teresa, we've had a few late joiners. I know that they missed the lamp, the aspect of the lamp. Why don't you fill in our late joiners on what happened with the lamp?
Well, there was from what I listened to, there was an antique lamp that had gotten broken, and the team that was there put the lamp in a box and hid it instead of letting the owner know. And the owner realized that it was missing and then found it broken and asked them about it, and they denied anything happening to it. Am I right? That's what I heard? Okay.
That's what I heard. You know, I listened to it the other day to make sure that the file was all right, and then I listened to it again tonight, and sure enough, that's exactly what John said. He said his friend who runs the Rose Island Lighthouse approached them. They denied it. He approached them more because he knows that it was there. It's a prime piece of, I mean, it's very visibly obvious. It's you know, it's always in the same spot. It's this historic piece that, I mean, it's eye catch. I mean, it's a prominent thing in that room. He knows if it's there or if it's not there. So he knew it was there when he dropped them off, and he knew he couldn't find it when he went to pick them up. And when he asked them, they denied it. They denied it. And he was like, I'm not going to get anywhere with these people. So he just kind of was like, whatever. It's broken. It's nothing. You know, it's like, okay, great. So that's a prime piece of history right there. Gone. And they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, at least be honest enough to say, you know. I mean, most people will understand and you know, they might be upset, but at least if you're honest about it and you attempt to make amends or attempt to fix the issue, you know, that's the right thing to do. You know, the person might be angry at you. I mean, rightfully so, even if it wasn't an honest accident, you know. I mean, if I had something here that was priceless and somebody accidentally broke it, I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't condemn them for life, but I definitely would be sad and angry and upset that I didn't have it anymore. You know what I mean? So,
to be disrespectful and just be like, no, we didn't do that. We would never do anything like that. Or really, because you're the same group that went into that other client's house, the private client's house, the show before this one with Eric Cuceres, where you actually stole something from the client. And then when asked if you had it, you're like, yeah. That's the root of all your problems. We took it for you. We didn't want you to take it. Can we have it back? Sure, you can have it back. 3 months later, we interview Eric and Sarah, and they still haven't gotten it back. Oh, yeah, they wouldn't break something, shove it in a box, and stuff it in the corner and hope no one notices. Nah, that's not them. They wouldn't do anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, are we starting to see a trend here?
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that we're really putting that out there, that there is a trend here. These aren't mistakes. So these aren't accidents. There's a whoops. We didn't know. Someone knows what they're doing. Yeah. And if you're a team leader and you don't know what's going on and you don't know this stuff is going on, you stink at your team leadership position.
Well, let's be a little more specific. Somebody knows what they're doing when they're conning people out of things, not necessarily being a paranormal investigator.
Okay. Who is the most stressed out person on the scene when we investigate?
The most stressed out person on the team?
That would have to be Kat. So high stress.
Yeah.
Make sure everything is going perfect and nothing is out of place and everything's picked up when we're done. And
exactly. If you don't have some sort of worry behind you, if you don't have some sort of, oh, my God, something bad's going to happen, I have to make sure nothing bad's going to happen because it's going to affect this environment, it's going to affect this location, you do not belong in a leadership position because you need to have a sense of responsibility in order to do that. And I think everyone on our team understands that.
Yep.
It gets on my last nerve to hear that. To hear the things that I've been hearing, and this isn't even the worst of it, is it, Tony? This isn't even the worst.
It's not even close.
Yep, so I mean, you know, and I know that there are going to be team leaders who are listening to the show, and they are going to relate to exactly what I'm talking about. The moment you bring three or four or however many people are on your team into an investigation environment, it's not about the thrill, having fun, getting your ghost hunting on. It's about, holy crap, I've got all these people I trust, they're my friends, but crap happens. We need to put things in place to make sure that we minimize the possibility that anything negative is going to happen. We walk into an environment, and you know this term, Teresa.
Yeah.
You hear it on geocaching, leave no trace. We do not want that environment to have anything changed about it that shows that we were there. Nothing. Right?
I agree. Yep, I agree.
So you can imagine why we're doing the show. because people walk in, not only do they destroy something and hide it like a 6-year-old, they left a disaster and didn't even feel bad about it. I mean, John was explaining it, and he was like, yeah, the guy, his friend called him and was like, you left a mess? You didn't find the need to clean that up? I mean, your food and all your, you know, the beds and just the disaster? And they're like, no. We wanted to make sure we made the boat on time. We had to make sure that we met you on time. We had to get off this island. We had to get home. I got stuff to do. Oh, okay. Well, no, but next time we'll get it right. Honestly, seriously, there's like not even an inkling of guilt. Like, holy crap, whoops, yeah, that was totally wrong. No, we'll get it right next time. Doesn't that just blow your mind?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. It's, you know, I mean, why would you think you'd be given a second chance? If a homeowner, and I know that this, I mean, this person doesn't live there, but, it is like being a homeowner. If they have to call you on it, then there's an issue. You know? I mean, they shouldn't have to call you on your behavior as an adult.
Duh, you're exactly right. Oh my God, how mortified. Teresa, how mortified would you be if someone came up to you and was like, you know, that's not really what I consider appropriate behavior. How mortified would you be?
Oh, completely. I completely. I'm in people's homes all the time. I mean, that's what I, you know, part of my job. So I'd be floored. I mean, I'm on my best behavior when I'm in someone's home, whether it's a paranormal investigation, my work, or I'm visiting somebody. You know what I mean? I don't go in and make a mess of their place.
I know exactly what you mean.
It just doesn't happen.
But,
and if I do, I clean it up.
That's right. I've seen you do it during investigations. I've seen all of us do it during investigations. The mere fact that we're even talking about this right now, this is blowing my mind. The mere fact that we are basing a show on the fact that they left such a mess and they literally destroyed such a precious, irreplaceable historic artifact and then hid it. And now the location is, I won't say that it's completely off limits, like no one will ever be able to go there. People will still be able to go there. But will it be more difficult? Yes, it will. Quite a bit more difficult. I can't believe we're having a show on this. I can't believe that they left the place so messy, so absolutely, like, it sounded like it was really, really messy. So much so that they actually gave how much back, Tony? Like, I can't remember what the number was, like a quarter of what the tourists were paying?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think he said exactly, but he said he gave back a good percentage of it.
Yeah, it was something like a third or a quarter or something like that. Because they came in from, what, California? Something like that. Anyway, I mean, the fact that they left such a mess that they had to actually refund, a portion of their stay for the week. The fact that they left such a mess that it has ruined it for the rest of us. I'm beside myself. What kind of mess do you have to leave that literally puts hundreds of dollars up as a barrier between the next group that can go in? I mean, what kind of impression? One time, you know, where things go bad, how bad does that one time have to be before an owner's like, oh, my God, this was so horribly awful. I have to do this now. I didn't have to do it before. And you can, I mean, she's done it how many times? Oh, Lord only knows. A couple of years, I think, maybe like a whole year or whatever. I don't know. She had groups in and out of there. I mean, not every single one was a perfect experience, I'm sure. But this one was so bad that some groups will not be able to go. Some groups just won't be able to afford it. That's what blows my mind.
Definitely. No, and you know, not to mention just the level of trust that's gone for the person who has been doing this and
yep.
has allowed people to be in there. I mean, that's kind of what I was hearing from the guest, is that, you know, that person was just really floored, and that level of trust, you know, is
mm-hmm.
just gone.
And you make an excellent point, Teresa, because that's the point that we're trying to make with these shows and with our messages and our warnings. This person, whether we want to say it out loud or whether we even realize it until this very moment right now when I say it, this person is representing all of paranormal teams in the New England region at a minimum. They are representing us wherever they go. Just like we're representing everybody around us wherever we go. And if you
yeah.
leave a bad impression, or you steal from somebody, or you break some historic artifact, or you leave a disaster, you're representing all of us. And this proves it, because now all of us are being punished for their ignorance. And everyone should be upset about that. All of us should be upset about that. Do you disagree, Tommy?
I don't disagree at all. And those who are presented with the facts from official documents yet
mm-hmm.
believe the source.
Yep.
You know, when it all comes down and this person is truly exposed by, you know, the police and gets arrested for doing the same thing over and over again, you'll be standing right there with her. And you'll have defended
yeah,
her all along.
Well, they can stand right there and be idiots beside this person if they want to. We have nothing to lose. We're putting the word out there. The proof is out there. We're not just saying it. Go try to go to the Rose Island Lighthouse. The fees have changed. They weren't like that before. They are like that now. I mean, it's not like we're making stuff up. You know what I mean? The artifact. The artifact is there. The artifact is not there anymore. It's been broken. We're not making this stuff up. We haven't been to the Rose Island Lighthouse. How do we even know about this stuff? And John didn't come on here and lie. You know what I mean? I mean, it's not like we're pulling people out. I mean, have you ever even met John? Tony, did we call John or did John call us?
John contacted us based on our advertisements of what was going on.
Yeah, because I had made a post and he was like, wait a sec, this sounds familiar. John called us. We did not call. I didn't know John from a hole in the wall. I never met the guy. I never talked to the guy. Had you?
Not at all. He contacted us, and I thought he was, like, when he first contacted me, I thought he was one of the cult followers out there who had
mm-hmm.
been brainwashed by her and was going to be defending her, like some other
mm-hmm.
people who have contacted us recently.
Oh yeah.
But it turns out no, he was interested in who we were talking about because of experiences he had heard recently, and just wanted to share.
Yeah, and he's one of the guys that sits out there and babysits teams that never had to be babysat before. I mean, literally, do you want some? If you had an option to be at a place like the Rose Island Lighthouse with no supervision whatsoever because you were trusted to be there, would you rather be there with no supervision, or would you rather have somebody who's not a part of your team just kind of watching?
Why don't you ask that question again?
All right. I'm not going to ask it again. I think the point's been made. Do you have a lag issue?
No, I'm chatting in the chat room.
All right. Can you just focus on the conversation here, please? I think it's clear that, I mean, any investigation team that's out there, would rather have an environment to themselves. I can hear someone breathing. It's loud. I think any investigation team is given an option, would rather have an investigation environment to themselves, especially because it's a public place, for instance, like the Rose Island Lighthouse, for example. If they say, hey, you can have this, you know, all to yourself, it's secluded, really, there's nobody out here but you because it's in the middle of the ocean. So, I mean, what can you really do to this place? So I'm going to drop you off and let you have it. I think people would rather have that than have someone like John, who now has to babysit. He has to babysit. He has to sit there and watch.
Yep.
He's got to spend his Friday night. He's got to spend his Saturday. And he may love it. That's not the point. I'm not saying he doesn't love it. But what I'm saying is that, it, I mean, you know, it is kind of like a, gosh, I wish we kind of were here by ourselves, because then we all know each other really well, and we know the sounds we make, and we know the movements that we make and stuff, and, you know, that's not happening anymore.
Nope.
So I don't know what kind of defense could be given for either one of them. It's not just one thing that happened that night, it's two. And it's being, you know, it was reacted to by the location. So, I mean, to say that it didn't happen would be to call the location, you know, the people that called this team on this crap, it would be to call them liars, you know? And they upped their price, and they put, you know, the deposit thing down, and now you got to have a supervisor. I mean, they did all this stuff to what? To make a lie look more, you know, real? You know what I mean? No.
Yeah.
This stuff happened. And now we've got all this stuff, all these hoops we need to jump through. So I'd like to say thank you to this team. I'd like to say thank you to this team leader. I'm sure there's more of us out there that really appreciate what they've done for us all. That's my sentiment. Teresa, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Well, I don't, can't even talk right now. I'm just sorry. I just, you know, I'm kind of watching the chat room and I'm listening at the same time. And, you know, I just wish people could see through the veil, just kind of realize kind of what's going on. I'm sure there are some really good people out there who are, you know, trying to do the right thing and trying to, you know, make things happen in the right way. And that's what we all need to be doing. That's what we need to focus on, is how we can do things in a way that's respectful and appropriate and keeping our clients safe as well as our teams. How's that in a nutshell?
That's the goal. You got it. I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. But for people to deny that these things are happening, I never met Eric Cuceres before he came on the show. I didn't even do the interview with him. Tony never met Eric Cuceres before he called. Is he lying too? So we got John Brightman, who's lying. We got the guy at the Rose Island Lighthouse. That guy's lying. We got Eric Cuceres. Him, he's lying, and his clients are lying. I mean, you got all these people that are lying. Yeah, that one person, that's the only person that's telling the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, people, wake up. Open your eyes. I mean, don't be an idiot. I mean, are there any more blunt things I can say to kind of make this clear?
Nope. Hi, Kat. It's John.
Hey, John.
Hey, John. Welcome to the show.
I just wanted to chime in a little bit, mostly on this lighthouse issue. I think we kind of got to take the same stance as we do in an investigation and go on fact that we know of for sure. I mean, I can kind of give the benefit of the doubt on the lamp because there's no real way to have any proof of that. It may or may not have been them. We don't know. But it's more on the issues of outstanding warrant, hard facts, things like that. Leaving the mess, that definitely, I mean, he knew the place was clean before he takes a group out there because he goes in.
Yeah. But John, to say the lamp thing didn't happen, that's also to call him a liar, to say that he didn't know where his stuff was, he didn't know what was not broken and what was broken. I mean, that's the guy's job.
I'm not saying he's a liar. I'm just saying we have to go on things that we know for sure.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that he knew that that lamp was there. And for us to say, well, for us, you, me, or them, this team, to say, well, no, that lamp wasn't there, it's to call this guy a liar. And I'm not willing to do that because he is, in essence, he is the client. He knows his location better than any one of us. And if he is willing to step up to the plate, make a phone call and say, hey, man, what the heck happened to my lamp? No one else is out there. The only thing they do is rent this place. And he goes in and makes sure it's clean before people come in. So if nobody's in there, I mean, say the ghost was in there and the ghost knocked it over. I mean, weirder things have happened. Who stuffs it in a box and puts it in the corner? So I'm not even giving that as a benefit of the doubt. The guy knows his environment. He knows what was there. He knows what was broken and what was not broken. He called them on it, and they lied. There's no benefit of the doubt for that.
But what I'm saying is even without the lamp, there is so much evidence and factual things about this person that should make anybody, you know, around her wonder what she is like and why these things have happened.
Right.
I mean, you don't, you know, even without that one piece, there's so much more about it.
Okay, true. Exactly. You're saying it very bluntly, very plainly right there. It's not just one thing. It's like a crap load of things. And we're not even done. Hey, I'm not looking at the chat room because I'm way away from my computer. I'm upstairs, so I don't have the computer in front of me. I'm just imagining what's going on in the chat room right now. Hey, this ride keeps on going. I mean, these aren't even the worst of it. So if you guys think that people are making this up and there's a big misunderstanding, you're going to be the biggest idiots on the block. And people are going to know exactly who you are because you have that team name after your names. You identify yourself to everybody. Everybody knows who you are. And if you're going to stand right there and be idiots supporting this person, then you deserve to go down with her. Because she's making a bad name for all of us, and you are voluntarily attaching yourself to this person. It's the stupidest thing I could think of. Oh, my God. Can you imagine just one of us on our team doing any one of these things this person has been accused of? How long would you last in Maine Ghost Hunters, John?
That would be the last time you were with Maine Ghost Hunters.
Exactly.
You wouldn't be there anymore.
No. And we're basing entire shows off of this pathetic behavior. You have the gall to sit there and defend it? Are you kidding me? I'd be running for the hills from it. Just one of these things. And trust me when I say, there's a lot more entertaining podcasts coming. Sadly, but truly. Rethink and think. Last thing I want is a phone call from someone new. We just got another phone call yesterday. Get another phone call from someone new about another private client victim. Wouldn't that just make this entire Halloween season? Because people are not listening. A lot of people are listening, but these idiots, you show them the proof, you tell them, we have people we've never even met before. They don't have anything, they don't owe us anything. We don't owe them anything. Completely third party, non-biased parties calling us up and saying, hey, man, you getting the word out? I need to get the word out. Okay, what's your story? Holy crap, it's the same team. It is the same person. Are you kidding me? Not kidding. You got to think about that. We're not chasing people. We wouldn't know who to contact. I can't even think of ways that we could possibly know who to contact. People are contacting us because they know that we're doing this show. They don't realize when they call us for sure that it is their complaints are about this same team until we get to talking. And then, sure enough, same team. If you're associated with that team, huh?
We've had people from the past and from the present come to us about this person. I mean, it's been a continuing thing for many years and still continues. And we're just trying to get the word out about it to help protect people who could, you know, mainly the client. You know,
That's all we care about, is making sure that there are no more victims with the clients, because the clients don't see this person coming. Other paranormal teams in the New England region, the word is out. People know. They may still be going to functions and stuff that this team is at, and I know that a few are. All eyes are watching. You got one eye looking to where they're looking at. You got another eye on the team, always on this team. They know who they're in the presence of. They know what to look for. They know what to keep their eye on. there are a lot of friends in paranormal, and there are a lot of people, you know, who know. They know what's going on. They know who to warn. They know what to say. And they know what they're doing. It's the victims, the future victims, the private clients, the locations. They don't see these people coming because they don't run in the circles that the rest of us, that the investigation teams run in. They don't hear the warnings. They don't hear the stories. They don't have any. It's like John said. He called up his friend. He's like, yeah, I've heard some stuff. And oh, too late. They've already been here. Oh, great. How'd it go? Well, they trashed the place and they broke something. They denied it all. And they were like, oh, I was too busy to clean up after myself. So now this place is pretty much, I got to change everything now. Oh, really? So everything that I heard that I called you, warn you about, actually happened. Great. I mean, isn't that interesting, John?
Yeah, and it's hard to understand where, you know, people like that, where their morals are at. You know, I couldn't imagine leaving a place, a mess like that, and trashing it. I mean, we will go through a place two or three times before we leave just to make sure everything's put back where it belongs and is clean. If we were to break something, we would let them know. I mean, it's just a standard moral that everybody should have. And it's not just on investigation. In my work, it's the same way. All of my guys, I tell them not to leave the place dirty. You clean up after yourself. You leave it the way you left it or found it.
Isn't it concerning? I mean, this is what I imagine. It's never happened, but this is what I imagine. I'm in a room with, say, Teresa, and we're investigating, and they have magazines all over, like, a coffee table, and I'm like, I'm bored. So I pick up, like, a few magazines. I kind of move them around and stuff, and then we're all done, and we get ready to leave, and I don't clean up the mess I made with the magazines. Either Teresa's going to stop and clean up the magazines for me, or she's going to slap me on the arm and say, hey, man, what am I, your maid? Clean up your magazines.
Definitely.
It blows my mind that there were, I don't know how many people were out there, and not a single one of them was like, hey, does anybody think we should clean this place before we leave? Anyone?
Well, it should be a group effort to make sure everything is put back.
Right.
And,
but don't you think someone
yes,
in the group...
It does fall on the leader to make sure, but I mean, it should be a group effort. Everybody should be involved in that and want to make sure everything is put back where it belongs.
Exactly. Someone should have stepped up and said, hey, we got to do this. But there were how many people there, and no one made sure it got done. No one. Because leadership didn't care, so why should they? And like you said, I mean, the morals, I mean, it blows my mind. I'm standing here, I'm like, how could we have a whole show on this? Because it's such a simple thing.
It's not just how can we have a show on this, it's how can we have so many shows on this?
Yeah, it's true. How can we have a show? Why is there a show on a team going into a house, telling the owners they can't be in their house, stealing something from them. I mean, let's just stop there. Stealing something from them. The end. I mean, now they go into this location and they break something. The end. No, they break something and then they put it in a box and they put the box behind something and they put it in a corner. And then when they call, they're like, oh, no, we didn't do that. You must be mistaken. You must have done that. No, we would never do that. We left your place. We totally trashed your place. We would never break anything and stuff it in a box, put it in the corner. That's not our style. It's the most ridiculous.
The problem is it's human nature for people to want to trust other people that they know and believe in what they're saying and doing. And they don't. Even though we're doing all these shows, until it happens to them, some of them just aren't going to believe. And when it does happen to them, you know, it might not be good.
I agree. I mean, and if you have the team name after your name, if you are calling yourself, you know, having yourself identified with this team name, you know, like I saw somebody in the chat room before I came upstairs that has the team name after. They're identifying themselves with this team name. You have already put yourself in a position where this is happening to you. Why you don't see that, you're treating me. I cared about you until you decided that you weren't going to believe me, Eric Caceres, John Brightman, the client, the Rose Island Lighthouse guy. I mean, when you stopped believing, when you didn't even give all those people a chance, you deserve what you get. You own it. Stand proud. Walk tall.
What's going to happen when something gets broke that is priceless and they get sued? Because everybody in that group, they're going to go after. So
they get paid.
You know, you got to be careful who you're dealing with, you know, just by association. You could get caught in a situation you won't want to be in, and by then it's too late. You know,
it already is.
All these warnings are out there.
Yeah. I mean, John, you're right, and it's already too late for some of them. Some of them are in so deep. I mean, I wish I was down at my computer right now. I wish I was down at my computer to see what's going on in the chat room right now, because some of these people are completely lost. They're over their heads. I mean, you know what? The people, if they're arguing with what's being said right now, they are in the perfect group. Because, like I said, they wouldn't last a second in a team like Maine Ghost Hunters. And there's a lot of teams out there. They wouldn't even last a second. They wouldn't even get in. We've interviewed people who have an interview process for letting people into their teams. These people in the chat room that are arguing with you wouldn't even make it on their teams. They just wouldn't. They're on the right team. They're on a team that accepts anyone. Anyone. Apparently.
It says a lot about people who can see criminal history in black and white, arrest records,
yep,
and open,
mm-hmm,
warrants,
yep,
and find that there is an acceptable excuse for that.
That is the isn't that the scariest thing? There's an open warrant for her arrest right now, and team members, group members, find that acceptable.
Because
Are
she
you?
Has a perfect explanation for it.
Oh, always. She's very charismatic. She's got that going for her. We know what she. I wish we had documentation for some of the stuff that we've heard that she's done. That we've actually talked to the victims. Correct, Tony? This isn't hearsay.
Exactly.
I know. Exactly. I mean. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about any of it. But I know some people. I know some people in New England in particular that would just be, their heads would probably burst into flames. It'd be so hot. I mean, but these idiots, and that they're just going to sit there and be like, I'm defending my team leader. You go ahead. You are exactly why. You are exactly the personality she wants on her team. Because you have all the proof there and you still don't believe it. You have all these people that don't know her. Don't know us, third party, unbiased. We haven't talked to any of these people since. I've exchanged emails with John Brightman like twice, two or three times, about when's the show going to air. That's it. And yet there he is telling a story about this person, and they don't believe. Okay. Hang on tight. Right, we haven't even crested the first. You know, big loop on this roller coaster ride.
And the other defense that's amazing is you can't crucify us all for what our leader is doing. Well, yeah, if you know what she's doing and you don't have any problem with it, then that's not a problem.
Let's reverse that, Tony. We have someone on our team that has a warrant out for their arrest. Are we going to leave them on the team? Are we?
Nope.
No, we're going to kick them off. Why? Because we don't trust them to be under our leadership in private client locations. Are we going to, well, you can't punish everybody. Well, they're not on our team anymore. But you're going to be on her team? You're going to call yourself by the group organization name that she founded?
And say, well, we can't crucify us all. Are you... What?
Okay, Philosophy 101. Look into it.
And I can understand if they're not privy to the information, because she's going to hide it as much as possible.
Oh,
she's
right.
going to give you a different name than what she actually has.
Oh, yeah.
And tell you
exactly.
her background is something different.
Oh, yes.
That's what I was thinking, because I, you know, I've been kind of watching the chat room, and I know that there are people that are saying, you know, there. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are in, who are, if you look on the website for this team, there are a huge amount of people, and I will almost guarantee that there are people who were listed on that site who do not have any idea what is going on. And it's not saying that every single person, because this is the assumptions that are being made in here, and it's really kind of getting a little aggravating, and then there's a lot of crap being thrown around in the chat room, you know, that you there are, you know, you can't necessarily judge everybody by one person, but if you are aware of and you know what is going on, then how can you ethically then follow that person? I'm not saying that the other people aren't ethical or don't have good hearts or don't want to be out there and do things. What I'm saying is if you know what's going on and you've really seen and you've seen the truth, then you need to stop and look at yourself and figure out where it is you want to be and what you want to do. You know, I don't think by any means we're saying that everybody who's part of that organization is a crook and a horrible person and a this or that, which is that's what I'm seeing in the chat room. And then a lot of mud is starting to be slung about other people who aren't even part of this discussion. And that is not fair, and that is rude and inappropriate.
And small-minded.
You know, and to me, that shows exactly where you're coming from.
Exactly.
You know what
please,
I mean?
Please.
So, you know, let's buck up here and be adults, people,
Teresa,
and have an appropriate conversation.
That's
sorry,
that's
I had to
great.
Jump in.
that's a great point. We're not crucifying everybody, but if you know and you don't believe the proof that's out there, I mean, you can go and contact these people yourself. They made their names known in the nationally aired podcast. They're not hiding. We don't own them. I just told you, we don't know them. They're third party. You can contact them. If they tell you the same darn story, you're getting it from them. If you still call yourself a member of this organization, that's your fault. You own that, and you will be held to a standard because you know and you chose it. But if you don't know, you know, there are people that don't know. They have no idea what's going on. They're victims too. But you stop being a victim. You stopped being a victim the moment you found out and chose to believe your team leader, who has already proven herself a liar over and over and over again, an unethical, amoral, whatever she did to get a warrant out for her arrest. Right now, there's a warrant out for her arrest. Right, you chose to believe this person? Over all these other people, what's wrong with you? Step back. Look. Step back and look. Do the right thing for yourself, not for us. I don't care what you do. I care about what happens to your clients, and you should too. That should be at the top of your list, and if it's not, you're not doing this right. Your head is in the wrong place, and that is what upsets me the most, because I've seen clients almost be victimized by this person. If we weren't there, Lord only knows what would have happened. And they know it just as well as we do. Tony, how much time do we have left?
90 seconds.
All right, let's do a plug and let's get this show closed before the 90 seconds is up.
All right, so we appreciate all the conversation in the chat room. You should really do some more research before you try to represent people. And there's a lot of conversation about us not being fair. And what I have offered is if you get this person to be on the show and face her victims, we're all for it. Apart from that, we are not going to listen to her lies be regurgitated through anybody else.
Because she knows
happen.
We know the truth.
Exactly.
She knows we know.
So,
whatever. All right. Good
we
night.
Appreciate Thank you, listeners. Thank you for the callers. Thank you, team, for being here to support us. You all have a good night, and I hope you all come back for our next Paranormal Fraud show next week.
Ooh, yeah.
See you then. We have
bye-bye.
Even more to share with you.